Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
You're very welcome back to Lahinch. Day one of the Irish Open is drawing to a close, and we have a very healthy Irish challenge on that leaderboard. Padraig Harrington, a brilliant first round of 63, leaves him on 7 under par, and he currently holds a 2-shot lead ahead of a group of 6 players. Shane Lowry and Cormac Sharvin also right in contention. They're on 4 under par after first rounds of 66, and still out on course because play is probably going to go on for, I would say, at least another hour or so. Robin Dawson, who was, I think, the very last man to get into the field this week, he is currently on 3 under par with 4 holes still to play. So we'll keep an eye on that over the next little while. It's been a memorable day here at Lahinch. Stunning conditions. The course looks immaculate, and we've seen some brilliant golf as well. And to chat about it all, well, we needed somebody to match that sort of stature, the doyen of golf writing in this country.
Gravitas, Nathan. We needed a gravitas.
We struggle for that, no matter how much we try.
Enough.
Dermot Galise of the Sunday Independent has joined us.
Hi, Dermot.
Good evening, gentlemen.
So you were working on other things. We wait and see what happens in the Sunday Independent this coming Sunday, but you were working hard. You didn't get out to see too much of the course.
I went out later on and saw some of what was going on. To be honest, Nathan, I mean, I was absolutely stunned at the scene around the 18th. I've never seen anything quite like it when Harrington Poulter and Tyrrell Hatton were coming down. To look around, right, we've seen grandstands before, but looking beyond the 18th green, you could see people on the clubhouse veranda, all packed there tight, looking out over. And behind me, on the road, and there was a wonderful mood about the place.
There's really something very nice about a road by the 18th green.
There's something
traditionally right about it.
Like St Andrews type of
100%,
thing.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, well, it did. It had a beautiful feel to it, the whole thing. And, of course, the weather. I mean, I was talking to a couple of local officials here, and they can't believe what's happening. I mean, to get weather like this, I know we should expect it in early July, but it's still remarkable, and particularly for the Irish Open, which has rarely been blessed with good weather. But to get that, and then to get Padraig Harrington on top of the leaderboard, as one of the guys said to me, he said, "Can it get any better?"
We shall see over the next 3-4 days, I guess. What makes a great Irish Open for you? Because we always look back and wonder, is it the quality of the field? Is it the ultimate champion at the end? Is it the festival feel around the town? Like, what is it that, when you look back at the Irish Opens you covered, that makes certain Irish Opens stand out?
Well, the festival feel, that's going to be dependent, obviously, on the venue. You don't expect that, say, around Portmarnock. But I think you need an Irishman, at least one Irishman up there, hopefully two or three. And we have that. The quality of the field, I think once the tournament gets underway and you get some decent scoring from the home players, that helps him immensely. I mean, you could look at Rory and the great contribution he made to the tournament, but it was largely in putting it together because, well, he went a few years there without making the cut. The tournament was still well worth watching. So it's not really the big names. It's how the thing plays out, I think. Day to day, obviously, and with Harrington on top of the leaderboard, he's still hugely popular. It's only when you write something about him, or you ring somebody about him, or you talk to people about him, you realise that the magic is still there with the public. Really is.
When did you first meet Harrington?
I would have first met him probably about 88, when he was 17 or 18. I certainly met him in 1990 competitively, when he was beaten by Darren Clark in the final of the Irish Close at Baltrae. And the previous week he was down here and lost again to Clark in the south of Ireland. Clark swept the boards that year. Clark actually won 4 championships in 1990. Give you an idea of how dominant he was. He had 24 successive match wins that year. He won the Spanish, the Irish Close, the South and the North, which was which was amazing golf, really. He was utterly, utterly dominant. Harrington then, Clark turned pro in 1990, didn't wait for the Walker Cup the following year. McGinley then turned pro after the Walker Cup, so Harrington effectively had the field to himself from that point onwards.
Has he changed much as a person?
I'd have to say no. No. Possibly became, well, no, not possibly. He certainly became quite a lot more intense about his golf and about, I suppose it's inevitable, the responsibilities of being such a leading player affected him to some degree. But he was never really a Jack the Lad, you know. He used to ring me at home now and again when I worked for the Irish Times back then, and he'd ring me up to try and ask if I could possibly help with some amateur project he was involved in and get a bit of publicity. It was never about himself, you know, it was normally about things he got involved in as an amateur. He was a likable person, you know, without being overly so. I mean, he was never sycophantic for a start. And I would have to say I probably admired him more than anything. I have the distinction of having been hit in the back by a Harrington golf ball, and it was sore, I'll tell you that. I was walking down the 20th, second fairway in Port Marnock in 1994 when he lost in the final of the close championship to David Higgins. They were obviously tied after 18, and I was on the right-hand side. I was walking in the rough as far as I can remember. Anyway, I had a leather jacket on me, and I got this belt of a ball in my back at about driving distance, probably about 250, something around there. And it was sore. And I remember going home, and my wife looked, and I stripped off just to see if there was any damage or cut or anything, and she could see the dimples of the golf ball in my back despite the fact I was wearing a leather jacket, you know. And it struck me that these things have quite an impact. You don't realize it really at the time, you know,
because they say on the tee he said watch this and pointed at you.
Anyway, I didn't lose him the final, because what happened was the ball just bounced down onto the fairway, and it was putting that cost him the match eventually.
It's sort of insane what Harrington did today, even listening to him in his press conference yesterday, where I certainly sense he wasn't his usual confident self about his game. And how could he be, considering his record this year, where he's made one cut in America? He's really struggled with this wrist injury, but he comes to a Lynx course where he has all sorts of history, and just something magical happens. Just it all seems to come together.
Yeah, I was talking to his coach, Pete Cowan, and Pete was saying that he had forgotten how to play the game, which seems extraordinary. In other words, that when he recently, of late, when he'd stand over the ball, he'd be trying to concentrate on what shot do I play here and how will I play it. And I distinctly remember in the wake of his second successive Open triumph at Birkdale in 08, he talked about not being aware of hitting any shots, of just being in the zone and just going out there and just letting it all happen. And that's obviously the difference, Nathan. I mean, something within him took over today, and he became the normal Harrington, the Harrington we once knew and loved and still do, obviously, but the normal one, the free-flowing Harrington, instead of being intense and wondering over the ball, what sort of a shot am I going to play, you know?
And was that something himself and Pete Cowan were working on? Like, Pete Cowan's obviously going on this incredible hot streak at the moment in terms of how well his players are playing.
Yeah,
but he's also starting to do a lot more media for the first time. He's been on Sky Sports quite a bit over the last few weeks. And it's been so interesting to hear his side of things and talking about players who he feels their swing is perfect, but they won't take driver off the tee. They don't have the inner confidence to do that. And the coach's frustration around it, that he's looking at Harrington and just can't get him to mentally get it right.
I think the most important thing, the most important dynamic between himself and Harrington is that they like each other. I'm not privy to what would go on between them. But I think that's a huge start. If you get two people who empathise with each other's needs, as it were. Cowan is a very bright guy. He's probably just as intense as Harrington in many ways. They're probably two of a kind, I imagine, but they certainly enjoy each other's company. I remember being, it was a Whistling Straits in the wake of the Firestone win by Shane Lowry. That was the Monday, actually, the following day. And I was there at Whistling Straits. The PGA Championship was on that week. And Cowan was there, and we were on the practice ground. And both of us were looking at Shane Lowry and Harrington dueling, as they do quite a lot, with the short game, you know, pitching, chipping. And Cowan was just loving every minute of it, you know, because he remembered Lowry as a kid. He helped the GUI at that stage in the early noughties. And Lowry, of course, was one of the bright young stars at the time. But he was looking anyway at Harrington and Lowry dueling with pitching and chipping and that. And he just, you know, he told me that Harrington was still the king. I mean, even though Lowry had just won a very significant event the previous day, but on the short game, that Harrington was still the king, you know. And he looked very closely at them and clearly loved what they were at, you know, and the dueling between them. It was great, very, very interesting.
He had planned to retire, Pete Cowan, but I heard him speaking recently and he said he realised he didn't know what the hell he would do with his time. He's no other interests, he's no other hobbies. He used to go and watch Sheffield United or Wednesday, I'm not sure which.
Well, he's play. From Sheffield.
Yeah, so. But he doesn't even do that anymore. And
do you blame him?
No, he said, like, why would I? So yeah. He's a phenomenal part of his career at the moment. Like, Harrington can win this, can't he? The way he's played today and just the mental strength and the position he's put himself in. Obviously, still a long way to go, but it would be quite remarkable if he did.
Well, I mean, I think the most important aspect of that, Joe, is that he's comfortable here.
Yeah.
He would have to be comfortable here. He did very well in the South over a period of years, and then in 1995 he won the Irish Close Championship here. And that must stay with him, you know, the memories of you know, the very the scenes, how, what he encountered and how he played certain holes. I mean, I even looking at him playing the last, you could see when he hit his second shot and blocked it right, he was obviously turned away immediately and was obviously not best pleased with it. But he then produces the most glorious bunker recovery from a, not an easy bunker. He's right down under the face of well below green level. And that sort of confirmed to me how comfortable he is around here. Those sort of shots, he plays them well anyway. But I mean, walking up towards that 18 green, I would imagine that he was thinking of nothing else other than getting up and down for a birdie, you know.
Yeah.
And it must mean something when you've had success. Now, he didn't have much success here. Well, he did. He won a very significant tournament, but in the South he didn't. But was always up there. Was always fairly much in the last last four year on year. And I would have seen a fair few of those matches with Tig, his brother, caddying for him. And he was a formidable competitor, there's no question about it, but particularly around here. Links terrain he loved.
And still is. And on 7 under par, he has a two-shot lead ahead of tomorrow's second round. He'll be out bright and early tomorrow morning. We need to take a quick break. You'll stick with us for another couple of minutes. We're going to talk a bit more about Lahinch and this year's Irish Open in just a moment. Welcome back to Lahinch Golf Club. The sun setting on the opening day of the Irish Open, where Patrick Harrington holds a two-shot lead on 7 under par. Shane Lowry and Cormac Sharvin among those three back on 4 under par. Still out on the course, Robin Dawson's having a tidy first round. He's on 3 under par with 3 to play. So there's still another hour or so of golf to go. Dermot Galise of the Sunday Independent is still with myself and Joe in our little booth here at the back of the media centre. I guess we shouldn't be surprised that it's turned out to be a brilliant perfectly organised Irish Open. When Paul McGinley puts his mind to something, he tends not to hold back. And we were at a very nice reception last night over in the members' lounge where McGinley was given honorary life membership of Lahinch, and as his way, he made a brilliant speech about his history with the club, coming here caddying for his father. Had his first round ever under 70 on the Castle course, which I think is where we're situated here, where the media centre is right now, and obviously then winning the South of Ireland, which was sort of enough for him to know that he could go pro. It's quite a storied history he has with this place.
Yeah, the thing I love most about Paul is his Irishness, really. You know, he really buys into everything that's Irish. And you could imagine him when he decided, my understanding is that when he was down here in 2017 for the 125th anniversary of the club, they were celebrating the South of Ireland, and he, as a former winner, was down. And he went out on the golf course on the Monday afternoon, and with John Gleeson and Patrick McInerney, former winner of the West, and I'm trying to remember who. I think that would have been it, and I hope to God I'm not leaving out somebody. But anyway, they went out on the golf course, and they drove around in a buggy, and Paul had a really good look at the changes that were made to the golf course around the millennium. And he loved everything he saw. He saw something very different to what he had imagined, you know, because at that stage it was 16 years since he had won here, and he hadn't actually been down here since then. And John Gleeson told me, who was chairman of the club's chairman of their management committee for the championship, he told me that Paul set his sights on, you know, I wonder would it be possible to bring the Irish Open here, and then followed it up by making it happen, as it were. I mean, he definitely would have had a significant in with the European Tour as a director of the European Tour, firstly, and also having brought the Ryder Cup to having won the Ryder Cup for Europe in 2014 at Gleneagles. They were really thrilled with that, and his success in Gleneagles, I think, convinced everybody that this guy is quite different. You know, he's not your normal run-of-the-mill pro, nor is he. He's a very bright guy and a very methodical. And
was he always like that when he was when you were following him in the amateur game and he was winning South of Ireland? That was always in him.
He always tended to perform above himself. I mean, he'd tell you himself he was 4 handicapper and really struggling to keep pace with guys like Harrington. Certainly with Clark, and he wasn't in their league at the time, and he knew it. But the great thing about him was that he was prepared to play to his strengths, number one, to try and develop as a player, which he did very successfully at San Diego University on scholarship there, and then to go out on tour, to apply himself, to be satisfied, to play within his strengths, I suppose, is what I'm really trying to say. He hadn't any crazy notions about what he might be. He was never going to be a star player like Rory McIlroy. But he knew his limitations. More importantly, he knew his own strengths, and played himself, and has had 4 tournament victories, which is, more importantly, I think, were his Ryder Cup achievements, you know, and then, of course, to go on and be captain. He's quite measured in everything he does, you know. He looks at it and he'll calculate if it's the right thing to do and how he should go about it. And that's the way he approached this. But, you know, to get the weather, I keep going back to the weather, Nathan. I mean, you know, everything happens with the sun overhead, really. You know, I mean, people's mood changes. The course looks different. The players are in a better mood. Officials are in a better mood. And people aren't complaining and bitching with each other over small things. We all just seem to be swept along, I suppose, on this lovely roller coaster that is the Irish Open in a week like this. We had elements of it very different to Lahinch in one respect, but in terms of the community, but still very much the same in Ballyliffin last year, you know. And it was lovely to be in Ballyliffin and see the locals there, John Farron, the manager of the golf club. The way they put their heart and soul into staging a memorable Irish Open. And they've done the very same thing down here. And this is really Ireland at its best, really. And McGinley loves that. He loves the Irish thing, as I say, and he buys into it. And we're getting the results, you know, we're getting the payoff.
Harrington going to get the job done? Call it.
Get the job done? Yes, I've no doubt that he can do it. I'm not going to call it. I mean, I think it's silly with 54 holes to play, but I mean, I don't think it's beyond the bounds of possibility that he can win. No doubt about that at all. But I think his main challenge will be not to get in his own way. You know, yeah. Because we all know he can do it.
All right, Dermot, great stuff as always.
Thanks, Dermot.
We might talk to you again a little bit later in the week as we see what happens with Paul Carrington. He does lead on 700 par, 2 shots clear of the field. We'll take a quick break. We're looking ahead to the weekend's football qualifiers, and we'll have more from here at Lahinch. We'll hear from Harrington, from Graham McDonald, from Shane Lowry as well between now and nine.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
All right, you're very welcome back to Lahinch. Almost done for day one of the Irish Open. What a brilliant opening day it has been, both in terms of this tournament as a spectacle and how Lahinch and the West of Ireland has been showcased to the rest of the world, but also on the golf course from an Irish point of view. It really couldn't have gone much better. We've had years where all the big names have missed out on the weekend, where there have been few Irish players in contention. There hasn't been much of a buzz. That certainly wasn't the case this afternoon with, well, Shane Lowry early in the morning and then Padraig Harrington throughout the afternoon, getting huge roars all across the course here at Lahinch. Joe Molloy is still with me, getting redder by the moment.
That sea breeze was our enemy out there.
Sun cream, kids.
Mm. It's no joke. We followed Harrington for a good chunk of today. He is hitting the ball very well. This was a really controlled, impressive 63. Just one bogey throughout the round. 8 birdies. He's putting well. He's chipping well. There was one poor chip we saw across the whole day. That was pretty much it.
Which is what cost him that bogey on 11.
He's hitting his irons fantastically well. And you know what? 47-year-old Padraig Harrington can bomb the ball as well.
He was playing with Ian Poulter and Tyrrell Hatton, who in fairness aren't two of the longer hitters on tour, but he was bombing past them without going all Phil Mickelson. He was dropping bombs on these two boys.
Yeah.
And you do wonder what that does for him mentally as well, that, you know what, I can still compete. Things haven't been going well. Mm. He's been struggling with that wrist injury. He's been missing cuts left, right and centre in America. But suddenly, it's an Irish Open, it's links, it's magical, and he just feels good about life.
Yeah, I mean, there was a touch of magic about it. In the sunshine, the crowds were amazing. There was one point where Harrington had to use a port-a-loo and he almost had a guard of honour out of there. Everyone backslapping him after he had taken care of business. And it was that kind of atmosphere all day. And yeah, I presume, you know, being the longest off the tee in any group, even at our very meagre level, you do kind of walk that bit taller. I'm head honcho here as we stroll down the fairway. So that kind of afternoon for him in the sunshine, I mean, it just was brilliant. And he was very... clear to say, like, this is early days and he knows that better than anyone, but you know, starting off with 7 under, it certainly means what you have to do across the next 3 days becomes far more attainable. Days of 2-3 under put him knocking at 17 under, and then he's right in the mix. He'll be very tough to beat. Now, they're all big ifs.
You say 17 under, he says 14 under, as is Harrington's way. He thinks about these things quite quickly, and he's going to be out very early tomorrow morning, around about 8:30. And he also talks about the American tour, how often if you're out late, you look at the leaderboard and somebody's sort of blowing the field away and you're starting out 10, 11, 12 shots back, and that gets into your head. He maybe has the opportunity to do that to the afternoon starters. We are getting ahead of ourselves, but we did manage to grab a couple of minutes with a, as usual, very patient Padraig Harrington at the end of his media duties. Here's what he had to say. Padraig, 63 to start off with, your best ever start to an Irish Open. How enjoyable was that?
Yeah, look, this was, I know I'm using the word pleasant and nice, and that's kind of what it was like out there. Myself and Poulter were having a stroll, having a chat. good things were happening, so it obviously makes it easier. Didn't have to work that hard. I wasn't out of position very much all day. You know, I think the first real chip shot I had was on 11, where I didn't get up and down. It was that kind of day. It was pretty straightforward. Good, and I won't say that momentum was with me. Good things were happening, but it was a quite a stress-free round.
That run of 5 birdies and 6 holes, the place seemed to gain momentum, come alive, everybody get behind you. How much were you buzzing off that?
Yeah, you know, I like that, no doubt about it. You know, I turned a good solid round all of a sudden into a great round, and you know, I knew there was other chances, and in some ways I might have, maybe if I got one or two more coming home. But look, it was a nice, steady sort of day. Doesn't always happen you get the 5 out of 6 hole birdies, but they certainly make a good card.
Yeah, well, we mentioned the 100-1 yesterday. You said maybe hold off, and I told the nation, and I'm sure they're all watching this wondering, maybe they shouldn't have waited a couple of weeks. Like, are you surprised by that? Are you surprised by that score in any way?
I am the worst tipster ever.
Now you tell us.
When it comes to golf, whoever I pick, I'm terrible. I'm a Jonah when it comes to things like that. But look, 100-1 was too high anyway, just because it's a Lynx golf course, and you know, the wise man might have had a each way bet me at that. You know, it would have been a big call for me to, for anybody to predict that I was going to win it or come out here and win this week. But you know, I'm in good form now, 7 under. This gives me a lot of different scenarios where I can be in with a chance of winning on Sunday.
Do you go out and be aggressive tomorrow morning and give those who wake up and are going out in the afternoon something to look at when they see that leaderboard and maybe frighten some of them off?
It all depends on how you hit the shots in the first couple of holes. It really, you know, it's a very fluid situation. Only a fool would say be aggressive. If you get the wrong number, the wrong pin, you shouldn't be aggressive. If you get the right one, you've got to go with it. My attitude would be, as I said earlier, having got a good score under the belt, there's lots of ways for me to get to the winning score this week. You know, I could still, if I go out tomorrow and shoot 73, I can still go and win the tournament. But if I start with 73, you know, there's only one scenario. That's, you know, shoot a low one. Whereas I've got 3 days to put together, I don't know what, I might need another 7 under par, maybe 14 under par might look good this week. I'd definitely take it now. So I've got to figure a way of playing the next 54 holes in that sort of number. But who knows, I might need more. Who knows, I might need less. We'll just figure it out as we go along.
So that is Harrington. Only a fool like me would say, would you go out and be aggressive? You just got to pick your moments tomorrow morning. And this day last year, Harrington started with, I think it was a 68 at Ballyliffin. He was a shot off the lead and he missed the cut. So when you're in the sort of form that he is, he can't take anything for granted right now. But I think just for the tournament, to have Harrington up there and presuming he can keep it together,
it's amazing.
Into the weekend,
it's amazing.
It just adds a whole new dimension.
Paul McGinley knows it better than most. The one thing you can't plan for when you host a tournament like this, when you have a tournament like this, is the leaderboard, and you can be badly let down at times because it's not like it's stellar when if you were to take away Harrington.
No, it's your general run-of-the-mill European Tour leaderboard. He's on 7 under par, so it's 2 shots clear. You've got the likes of Wade Ormsby, Michael Lorenzo Vera, Hyewon Park, Torbjörn Olsen, who's obviously a Ryder Cup player, Lee Slattery, Eddie Pepperell, who's one of the more interesting players on tour. Then you go back to 4 under, that's where there are some interesting names. You have the likes of Ian Poulter, Lee Westwood, Shane Lowry, Martin Keimer, Cormac Charvin, who's had a brilliant afternoon, a 66 for the man from Ardglass. But a lot of good names there, and particularly Shane Lowry, who, again, we followed for quite a while. Didn't seem to be flowing quite as easily as it was for Harrington, but grounded out. Graham McDowell finished on 2 over. We'll hear from him short. He was saying that the rough he found was a little bit dead, more dead than he expected. And Lowry just found himself in that little tight cut of rough a few times, but it never seemed to fluster him at all.
He's in absolutely lovely shape, Shane Lowry, and he'll go out tomorrow, I suspect, feeling very good about things. Short game, in excellent shape as well. We saw him get up and down a few times. He can get the ball out there. We know he's in good form. I would think he's looking at 4 under and saying absolutely delighted with that. He walked off the 18th and big smile. There's something lovely, and it looks great on television as well, if you get a chance to see it, if you were away from the TV today. When they come off 18 and there's that lovely old road and the wall, the stone wall by 18, and they just cross the road through everybody, backslapping them as they make their way over to sign their card. There's just something so lovely and traditional about it all. And Lowry did that. And I was speaking to him even afterwards, even when he just had finished the media duties, and he was a man very at peace, I felt, with his game and stopping and signing stuff for young kids and saying hello to everyone. And yeah, I think Shane Larry will be looking at this and liking the shape of it.
Well, you look at his form of the last 6 months, and he has that to fall back on here, that this isn't a one-off round or anything like it. This is the way he's playing right now. He's playing as an elite player week in, week out, and he continued that today. Let's hear then what Shane Larry had to say.
Shane, brilliant opening round. 66, sun shining, big crowds, birdie in 18. Yeah. An enjoyable few hours?
It was, yeah. It was one of my more enjoyable 4 or 5 hours on the course, but I played okay. I didn't feel like I played great, but I hit it in the right spots. I managed my wear on the golf course well today, and that's what I'm most happy about.
Yeah. Off the tee, was that the one thing where maybe you're looking to improve for tomorrow?
I didn't hit as many fairways as I would have liked, but then again, like, I stood up and I rifled one down the last when you really need to, so that was quite nice to finish on that one. But I did say to Darren, my caddy, on the last green, I said we'll go and hit a few drivers before we go home this afternoon.
Is that where the 6 months of good form comes into play, a day like that, that you have this confidence in yourself that you don't need to force it?
Yeah, and it's not so much confidence, just like I'm not going to get down on myself for hitting bad shots or putting myself in bad places. I just have to go down and find my ball, and hopefully it's a half decent lie and move on with it from there. And that's the way I've been playing golf over the last few months, and it seems to be working. So I hope I keep doing that for the next while. And yeah,
that protest in 18, did it have any impact on you at all?
No, well, I do put it. I hung back a little bit and waited for them to get removed. But yeah, I not really have much to say about that.
Yeah. What's the plan now for the rest of the day? Is it go to the range, hit a few balls, and just try and get the head right for tomorrow?
Literally, I go and hit 15 balls, 20 balls, and back. Nice evening. So I'm saying we whip out the barbecue again this evening, and chill out for the evening.
Yeah, huge crowds. It doesn't feel like a Thursday morning of an Irish Open. The support out there for you as well. You had a good group as well. It seemed like a good atmosphere.
Yeah, it was good. Like, I seen a draw on Tuesday, and I seen us playing with Tommy and Russell, and I was quite happy with that. Two lovely lads and very, very easy to play golf with. So it was nice, and as you say, the crowds are huge, and I'd say they're going to be quite big tomorrow as well. Looking forward to it.
So for anyone coming down tomorrow, Shane Lowry will be among the later starters. He'll be teeing off at lunchtime from 4 under par. So listen, you have Harrington leading, you have Shane Lowry right in contention. Yeah. It's everything you would want from an Irish point of view.
Yeah.
One of the more disappointing rounds came from Gray McDowell. It just never really happened. 2 over par round of 72 and in pretty perfect conditions.
Yeah.
I think he knew himself he needed a little bit more. Here's what he had to say.
Graham, the word frustration, I think you've used quite a lot there over the last few minutes. What was the issue in that 72?
It wasn't frustration. I'm not really sure it's the right word. It was more just kind of couldn't get anything going. I couldn't get any momentum going. I felt even like my good tee shots out there finish a yard in the semi, and the semi's kind of thick. It looks like it's going to jump from the semi, and sometimes it doesn't. So it was hard to control my iron play well. Even though I did make some nice swings, so it was, I don't think I had a birdie putt inside 10 feet all day, which was tough on a golf course which is there for the taking a little bit. 12 was a killer blow, really. 12 was playing straight down wind today, and I flared my drive and caught an awful lie and ended up missing a short one for par, so that really derailed my comeback a little bit on that back nine. But it's not alarm bells. No, you don't have to go rebuild something this afternoon. It's just a case of sharpening some stuff up and looking forward to getting back out in this great atmosphere tomorrow.
So McDowell is probably looking at 66 tomorrow to make the cut, and already probably has a real mountain to climb to try and win this tournament. But with Portrush on the horizon, you want 4 competitive rounds on a links course if you can get them. So there's still plenty for him to play for. It's a crowded leaderboard. It's the first day, but it's been a bloody good first day.
Hey, listen, it's been unbelievable. I think certainly sometime around yesterday we got high expectations here because the weather was so good, the atmosphere was so lovely, the crowds were good, and today it's surpassed all expectations. It's been a pretty close to perfect day one at the Irish Open, and hey, we could be in for a good one here.
Yeah, and we'll have lots more to come from Lahinch over the next few days on Off The Ball and on offtheball.com. But for now, Richie, from Lahinch, what a day it has been. Patrick Harrington leads the Irish Open.
Cheers to that, lads. There'll be lots more from Lahinch tomorrow and across the weekend. For now, though, that is all from us. Just enough time to remind you that in a week's time, we're going to be at the Alex Hotel for our all-female roadshow. We've teamed up with 3 and 20 by 20 to celebrate the best of Irish women in sport. We'll be joined on the night by the likes of Sonia O'Sullivan, Annalise Murphy, Jessie Barr, Rena Buckley, Kate and Jessica Harrington, Ted and Katie Walsh, plus many more. It's an exclusive off-air event, so of course the only way to enjoy it is to be there on the night. And you can get your tickets now at offtheball.com/events. OTBAM will be live across our social channels from 7:30. We'll be back on the radio from 7 p.m. with more build-up to the weekend sport. I'm in for Tom Dunn next. So till 9 o'clock, good night.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.